Bah humbug.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Glad you can join me for more marketplace coverage of the financial crisis fallout. It's extremely rare that from one Christmas to the next, people spend less money. Retail spending might grow more slowly, but it rarely declines. A survey out today says this is the year it will happen. America's research group predicts a 1% drop in holiday spending. Best Buy calls it the worst retail environment it's ever seen. This morning, the company cut its 2009 profit forecast by a lot, and Macy's said it lost $44 million last quarter. This is all not sitting well on Wall Street. So far, the Dow is down another 2%. That's 171 points to 8522. The NASDAQ is down 26, and the S&P 500 has fallen 17. In Asia, the markets closed about 1% lower, and European shares are down 1% so far. This morning, Treasury Secretary Hank Paulson will give an update on the $700 billion bailout package. The money is almost half gone, all accounted for. Some people in Congress are getting a little nervous about that. Nancy Marshall Genzer has more.
Congress gave Treasury Secretary Paulson the first half of the $700 billion bailout package with few strings attached. But lawmakers need to approve the second half, and many do not approve of the way Paulson has been spending the money. They don't think enough is making its way into loans for consumers and small businesses. And congressional leaders have joined Michigan lawmakers in asking Paulson to use some of the money to help the auto industry. Congressman Sander Levin is a Michigan Democrat.
We have to act in November in terms of the auto industry. It can't wait.
Congress could amend the bailout bill to force Paulson's hand, but University of Texas law professor Henry Hugh expects Congress to green light the rest of the cash with or without changes.
Nobody wants to be seen to be increasing the risk of some kind of economic Armageddon.
Adding to the pressure, no one's sure about the proper role of government during an economic crisis. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall Genzer for Marketplace.
Commentator Robert Reich says government does have a role, but it shouldn't be a bailout machine.
When a big company that gets into trouble is more valuable living than dead, there's a well-established legal process for reorganizing it called Chapter 11 of the Bankruptcy Code. Under it, creditors take some losses, shareholders even bigger ones, some managers' heads roll, companies clean up their books and get a fresh start, and taxpayers don't pay a penny. So why exactly is the Treasury substituting government bailouts for Chapter 11? Even assuming Wall Street's major banks and insurance giant AIG are so important to the economy they can't be allowed to fail, they don't have to be bailed out. They could be reorganized under bankruptcy protection. Their creditors, shareholders, and executives would take bigger hits than they're now taking. Now the taxpayers are bailing them out, but they took the risk. We didn't. It would be different if Main Street was getting something out of all of this, but credit still isn't flowing to small businesses or distressed homeowners, and unemployment is skyrocketing. There's more at stake for Main Street when it comes to American automakers, now on the edge of bankruptcy, because 2.5 million households depend directly or indirectly on them for their paychecks. But the best way to protect all these people is not necessarily to pay off the automakers, creditors, shareholders, and executives with no strings attached. When the government bailed out Chrysler in the early 1980s, a third of its employees were laid off. In order to keep auto workers employed and also move Detroit to more fuel-efficient cars, all stakeholders will have to sacrifice. What a tragedy it would be if the government spends so much on these bailouts there isn't enough money left for the next administration to help average people get affordable health insurance, send their kids to good schools, and find good jobs, including jobs rebuilding the nation's crumbling infrastructure and finding alternative sources of energy. You see, it's not the big guys who need rescuing. It's the small. And right now, the government has its priorities upside down.
Robert Reich is an economic advisor to Barack Obama and the author of the book Super Capitalism. Share your thoughts with us at marketplace.org. We've been doing the series What's the Fix? Asking for solutions to the financial crisis. Australia's Treasury Secretary added his two cents today. Ken Henry says the threat of recession could evaporate if people just started thinking positive. He blames the world's economic woes on fractured confidence. And instead of talking ourselves into worse outcomes, He says we should just be upbeat. This is the Morning Report for Wednesday, November 12th on Marketplace.org. Yesterday, Citibank said it would take steps to help people stay out of foreclosure. And the government said it would speed up the renegotiating process for loans under Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. This idea of helping homeowners who took on mortgages they can't afford anymore, not everyone likes that. Lisa Roth has more.
Nobody seems to know how many homeowners would benefit from these or similar plans. But hedge funds, for one, think they're a terrible idea. Back in the day, hedge funds bought up a lot of these mortgages as securities. And the way the economy's going these days means they're losing money left and right.
This heightens that pressure because they will find payments coming in at lower rates than they contracted for.
Susan Wachter is a real estate professor at the Wharton School, and she says some politicians are worried the plans reward risky behavior.
What message are we sending going forward in terms of the mistakes people have made in entering into these mortgages?
Wachter thinks the real point's that nobody thinks modifying loans is a brilliant idea. It's just that the consequences of not modifying them would be so damaging. In New York, I'm Elisa Roth for Marketplace.
The World Trade Organization hosts an emergency meeting today. It's hoping to open up credit on the high seas. And by that, I mean credit for shipping things around the world. Jennifer Collins reports on the tools that will do it.
They're called letters of credit, and they guarantee what's promised. If you're a buyer, it's cargo. If you're a seller, it's cash. But the price banks charge for these letters has tripled recently, and it's made shipping incredibly expensive. So yesterday, the World Bank stepped in and doubled the amount of shipments that it will guarantee, from $1.5 billion to $3 billion. Shipping lawyer Steve Dixon says it's because old-fashioned sources of finance are hard to find.
Not many banks do trade finance anymore. They tend to be large international banks that have been really hit by the subprime and derivatives problem. And so they're the ones that are the most reluctant to do anything that's expensive and risky.
The head of the WTO says it's time to free up idle cargo ships so commodities like coal and grain can flow around the globe. I'm Jennifer Collins for Marketplace.
The European Union wants to crack down on credit rating agencies. Standard & Poor's, Moody's, and anyone else that operates in Europe. Kyle James reports from Berlin.
Many see credit rating agencies as one of the bad guys behind the current financial crisis. They're accused of, basically, not doing their job and underestimating the risk of the investment vehicles at the heart of the current financial meltdown. The European Union is expected to do more than provide a simple slap on the wrist, according to Philip White, an analyst at the Center for European Reform.
They were doling out AAA ratings to investment vehicles that actually turned out to be a lot more risky than that. The general drift in the European Union is to prevent financial crises from happening in the future, is to tighten the regulatory screw.
The new EU rules will likely be tougher than those under discussion in the U.S. Europe could require agencies to make their assessment methods more transparent and put an end to consulting services that might lead to conflicts of interest. In Berlin, I'm Kyle James for Marketplace.
Africa's banking system has so far been fairly insulated from the global market meltdown. A lot of Africans don't have bank accounts, much less stocks and bonds or retirement funds. But Africa's getting squeezed in plenty of other ways. Here's Gretchen Wilson in Johannesburg.
To understand how Africa is feeling the hurt from the financial crisis, start with commodities. In South Africa, platinum mines like this one process tons of mineral-rich earth. Just a few months ago, colossal demand drove global platinum prices to more than $2,200 an ounce. Africa is rich in natural resources: oil, copper, gold, and coal. David Shapiro is a market analyst with Sasfin Securities, a stock brokerage firm in Johannesburg. He says the recent demand for Africa's commodities really opened the continent to new development.
That's really been driven by the growth in emerging markets, particularly Chinese demand, Indian demand, Russian demand, etc.
But the meltdown of financial markets cooled global demand for Africa's resources and pulled back speculation. Commodity prices have crashed. Platinum alone is now trading at less than half of those earlier highs.
It's been quite a shock therapy for us.
Today, Africa's businesses and governments are afraid the crash will scare away rich Western investors. The UN says foreign direct investment here climbed to $53 billion last year, more than five times what it was just 8 years ago. Dennis Dykes is chief economist at South Africa's Nedbank Group.
Tied to that was a lot of infrastructure spending coming to the continent in terms of railways and roads, even things like telecommunications infrastructure.
But some governments are putting these big projects on hold, which means ordinary Africans may have to wait longer for electricity or irrigation systems. Some say they expect to be affected in other ways, too. Barbara Mufisi is a baker in Johannesburg. Her aunt and uncle live in London and send her family hundreds of dollars a month.
Those people who are overseas, they help us a lot.
The World Bank says $28 billion in remittances were sent home to Africa last year. Mufisi says that's bound to shrink if migrant workers lose their jobs.
It worries me because our hope is on them.
The next fear is that penny pinching in Western countries will also mean shrinking tourism dollars and cuts in foreign aid. In Johannesburg, I'm Gretchen Wilson for Marketplace.
Here's something upbeat. Price of oil is still falling. It hit $58 a barrel this morning. That's almost a two-year low. But lest we forget about the big picture, the International Energy Agency reminded us today. It gave the long-term outlook. Here's Jeremy Hobson.
The IEA predicts a slow but steady increase in global oil demand through 2030. Most will come from India, China, and the Middle East. Phil Flynn of Aileron Trading says the IEA is probably right, even if it seems a bit strange at the moment.
The big question is, when is the economy going to come back? Is it going to happen a year from now or 3 years from now? Nobody knows. But when that happens, of course, we'll be back in the same boat as we were, you know, last year when we could barely keep up with demand.
Right now, suppliers can barely keep up with the lack of demand. Word is OPEC may cut production again next month. Tom Kloza of the Oil Price Information Service says traders will remain focused on the short term.
Traders have the attention spans of probably four-year-olds, and they don't necessarily seek depth. They seek to follow the trend because the trend is your friend.
Kloza expects the price of crude will keep falling in the coming months before trending upward in the spring. In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson for Marketplace.
And in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for listening and enjoy your day.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.